Welcome to the Weight Loss for Women podcast, where we teach you how to break free from restrictive diets, restore your metabolism, and build a body you love so you can look and feel your best as you age. All right, let's dive into this episode.
I'm Kitty Bloomfield, co-founder of New Strength and Saturay, creator of pro-metabolic food supplements and seriously saturated skincare. And today I have Lara Bryden on the podcast. She's written three amazing books. I've read two of them, and she's actually sent me a third book, which I meant to bring back to Australia to read while I was here, but I forgot. And, you know, if you're listening to this and you've done one of my courses, you probably would have heard me talk about her book and mention it before. And I just have been meaning to get her on the podcast, just have a bit of a yarn about, you know, perimenopause and menopause and, you know, some of the common misconceptions and just have a good chat in general. So welcome.
Yeah, thanks so much, Kitty. Thanks for having me. We're just talking off air that we have Australia in common. Obviously, yeah. You're Australian, but I lived there for a long time. So, yeah, we have common ground.
Yeah, she's in New Zealand now, and she's got I don't mean weird as in you've got a weird accent, but I couldn't pick it. You know, it's just a bit.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's Australian, but it has this Canadian twang at the end of it. So, Lara's 54, so she's, I was just telling Lara that most of the women in our program are in their 40s and 50s, so, struggling with perimenopause and menopause. Her books are really, really relevant. So maybe you just want to start off by telling people, all the listeners, a little bit more about who you are and, why you do what you do and the different books that you've written, and then we can just have a chat, I guess.
See what topics grab us. Great. So I'm Canadian, we've said. I lived in Sydney for a long time. So I'm a naturopathic doctor. Before that, actually, I was an evolutionary biologist in Canada. I published a peer-reviewed paper in that, in sex differences in foraging behavior of animals. So that my interest in female physiology actually goes way back, like 30 years to when I was doing biology. Then I trained as a naturopathic doctor. I worked in Canada for a short time. And then before I met a man, of course, it's like the classic story, moved to Sydney. And I worked really full time with patients on the ground in Sydney for 10 or 15 years, doing it all, like seeing, and that gave me a really good opportunity to see what works for periods, for hormones, and what doesn't. And of course, I was happy to discover that natural treatments work very well for women's hormone problems. We talked a little bit about that off air already. It's just quite astounding, actually, how well the female body responds to some pretty simple things sometimes. So I got to learn that firsthand. And then about 10 years ago, I wrote my first book, Period Repair Manual, which is, I wrote it for my patients, actually. I was like, I just thought, because I was working so full time, I thought if they could just read this, pre-reading or even maybe after the initial consult, just to kind of bring them up to speed with everything. And then we could make a lot better, faster progress. I wouldn't have to spend so much time in my consultations explaining things to people because they'd have this literacy, body literacy or menstrual literacy. And so that's why I wrote it. But then the book has just done so well. It's just reached all corners of the world and just, not just women, but doctors everywhere just saying, well, this is like a different way to think about periods. So I've been very happy about that. And then I wrote my second book, Hormone Repair Manual, came out in 2021, so a few years ago now, which was about perimenopause. I phrased it for women over 40, because even at that time, 2020, 2021, when I was writing it, no one knew the term perimenopause. Of course, that seems crazy to us now because it's just everywhere now. Like you can hardly turn around without seeing peri. But back then it was kind of an unknown word. So that's my perimenopause book. And then my new book, I'm looking forward to you getting a chance to read, is called Metabolism Repair for Women in Most Parts of the World. In Australia, it's actually got a different name, The Metabolism Reset. And it's about, it's primarily about insulin resistance, which is kind of off. Well, in other words, what's the phrase? I do know from 25, 30 years with patients that people don't really respond to that. They don't really know what that is, or they think, oh, maybe that sounds complicated, or like maybe it doesn't apply to me. But insulin resistance is very common. It's very important. We'll probably, touch on that a little bit today. It's not just about high blood sugar. Far from it. You can have low blood sugar with insulin resistance. It's one of the main reasons for abnormally high hunger, for a reduced ability to burn body fat, excess body fat for energy. And I've been kind of surveying all my different you know, podcasters, we've been interviewing me. What do you think, Kitty, if we were to rebrand insulin resistance, like give it a new name, what would you call it? Or maybe what do you call it already in your work? Do you have a sense of that? Somehow I've lost your audio. What's happening? Yeah. Oh. Sorry. Oh, I don't know if it's just me or what's happening. I could hear you before.
I could still hear.
Oh, there you're good. Oh, you're coming in and out. Yeah.
That's
sorry. Oh, there you're in. You're back in.
I'm good. Okay.
Yeah, you're good now. So tell me, how would you rebrand insulin resistance?
I actually don't know. I think we just say insulin resistance. You know, yeah. But maybe because we do talk about it a bit, so it's.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Your clients are kind of familiar with the term or feel comfortable with it.
Yeah.
You know, I think people use different words. They use maybe carbohydrate intolerance or metabolic dysfunction, which is the term I use in my book. The other way I've been framing insulin resistance, it's a hormonal condition. I mean, that might make it kind of resonate more with people, I think, just to realize we think about lots of different kinds of hormonal conditions, but insulin resistance is a big one.
And I think, you know, and we'll probably talk about this. One of the things we really encourage women to do is strength train as they age because, you know, muscle is this, like, this is how I describe it, like a sink for glucose, and it improves your body's ability to utilize, you know, carbohydrates. And that's just one, you know, thing that we encourage women to do in the program. And there's lots of things that align in your book that we get women to do. And there's so many things that I want to ask you, and I'm just thinking where to start. And probably, because most of, like, our target audience is more women in their 40s and 50s. And I found, and I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Ray Peed or Emma Skourakis, I found their work many years ago. And one of the things I was doing was taking the pill for many years. And then I, you know, met Emma and she educated me, and I learned the, you know, facility awareness method and started tracking my cycle and, you know, the fifth vital sign. And you're right. It's just, I feel like there's just a real lack of education around the cycle or even what the pill or some of this contraception does. So I think your first book is really amazing and women can read that, but maybe I'd like to just focus more on the sort of like perimenopause, menopause, because we could be here for hours. But you know, I just find a lot of women, you know, when they come to us, they're very stressed. You know, they're not eating enough food, they're not eating enough protein, they've got stressful jobs, they're not, you know, getting enough sunlight, they might be drinking alcohol, and then they start to experience all these, you know, perimenopausal symptoms, menopausal symptoms. And I really like in your book how you talk about progesterone, like bioidentical progesterone. And can you talk a little bit more about, like, what's happening in perimenopause? Yeah. Because I feel that, like, so many women go to doctors and they're like, oh, just, you know, don't address any of your lifestyle. Just take estrogen. Just take estrogen. Yeah. And it's going to fix all your problems.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So as I talk about in Hormone Repair Manual, perimenopause is a hormonal recalibration. It's a, what I call second puberty. And it's the body is going through a transition state that includes a neurological transition. And that can make women a lot more vulnerable to some of the stressors that they might have been able to just kind of get away with before. Like, they might have just been barely hanging on before and doing, you know, but then once you get into the recalibration phase, you start to feel things more. So that's where it can be, and we even talked a little bit off air, like, it can be very powerful to just start to line up some of those things, like moving the body, building muscles, aligning circadian rhythm, taking, you know, magnesium, eating enough protein, quitting alcohol. All those things can make a huge difference to the perimenopausal experience and to help stabilize the nervous system. And then in answer to your question about progesterone, well, we could do a whole podcast on progesterone because this.
Do it. I think we should. Well, yeah, because I just feel should. That women don't really understand what's happening, you know, like what's actually happening during this time.
There's a colleague of mine. So she's actually a journalist. She's actually in your part of the world in Abu Dhabi. She's a Canadian journalist. She writes a newsletter called Hot Flash Inc. Anyway, she wrote an essay or like an article about progesterone where she talked about the weird vibe around progesterone. And this has definitely been the case. Like, there's been a few decades of quite a weird vibe around progesterone from I guess, if you will, mainstream medicine. So I guess I could try to define some terms. You know, obviously progesterone is, your listeners might know, you know, it's the hormone we make after ovulation. If you're doing fertility awareness tracking, like you just mentioned a few minutes ago, it's the hormone that increases our body temperature. It's quite an important part of the menstrual cycle. It is also, incidentally, the first hormone to start to leave the scene during perimenopause. In fact, it's the departing of progesterone and the starting to have, you know, shorter luteal phases and more cycles where you don't ovulate, what are called anovulatory cycles. That departure of progesterone is actually what I would say defines the onset of perimenopause. So that's like the early start of it. One of progesterone's many powers is it does help to stabilize the HPA axis or the, you know, adrenal axis. It does help the body's stress response. So losing progesterone will start to straight away just destabilize the stress response system. So women will start to feel stress more acutely. Now, before we get too much further into progesterone, I do have to differentiate it from the progestins of hormonal birth control. And this is where the weird vibe has come in, as Anne-Marie says. So there's been this kind of bizarre like narrative that, you know, they're all the same, that the progestins in hormonal birth control are actually progesterone, but they're really not. And part of the confusion, if it helps people to understand where all the confusions come from, part of it is that estrogen, the word estrogen is a generic term that can refer to estradiol, our main ovarian estrogen. It can refer to ethanol estradiol, the estrogen in the pill. It can refer to lots of things, whereas progesterone is not a generic term. It's only the hormone we make, either the hormone we make after ovulation, the hormone we make during pregnancy, or you can take natural progesterone or body identical progesterone as well. But you never used to be able to. Like for the longest time, you know, the only sort of progesterone like thing you could get was a progestin. And they were, unfortunately, the progestins through the decades are really quite different from progesterone. Like they have a different effect in the brain, like sometimes the opposite, whereas progesterone is quite calming. Progestins can promote anxiety, whereas progesterone probably shelters the breasts from cancer to some extent. All progestins slightly increase the risk of breast cancer. So those are just some of the examples of the differences. And I think, yeah, this sort of insistence that they're all the same is part of the weird vibe. So, you know, back when I started practicing medicine in the 90s, one of my main jobs was to take women off the old school hormone therapy, which was always a progestin, and get them on what was then called bioidentical or body identical, and get them onto a more like molecules, estradiol and progesterone, that are exactly identical to the human estradiol and progesterone. And so, but that approach was really poo-pooed back then. That was considered, you know, it's just quite strange, actually. It was considered, you know, not real, like, you know, bioidentical progesterone's no better. And yet here we are now, 30 years later, and everyone agrees that body identical progesterone is safer and better. That's why the mainstream medication is now body identical progesterone, which is amazing. Actually, it's great that it's actually become the standard. But that's a bit about progesterone. So there's lots of ways you can take progesterone on its own for symptom relief. You can combine it with estrogen. Yeah, there's lots of different ways to talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen incredible results. We always obviously get them to make all the nutrition and training and lifestyle changes first and support their body, but then introducing some bioidentical progesterone and have seen amazing improvements in their symptoms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so of course, people are probably wondering, you can take it as a cream, like a transdermal, or you can take it as a capsule. Always, if you're going to take a progesterone, like a natural progesterone or body identical progesterone capsule, you want to always take it at bedtime because it's quite tranquilizing, almost like sedating, like a sleeping pill, which a lot of women love in perimenopause when sleep can become a problem. It can be great for migraines. It has an interesting, there's also been some weird vibe or controversy around it from a metabolic perspective. So we could talk about that a little bit because obviously you know a lot about metabolism as well. And so whereas estradiol, like our main estrogen, improves insulin sensitivity, right? Like I think everyone agrees on that. It's sort of in general, estradiol promotes metabolic flexibility and sort of metabolic health. Probably promotes weight loss or the loss of fat, or like visceral fat. Whereas progesterone has had the reputation of you know, sort of doing the opposite. And I think in my new book, I talk about how that's just not fair at all. I have a section called In Defense of Progesterone. So progestins, some of them, depending on which type, there's like, you know, 30 different progestins and they all have quite different effects, but some progestins do cause insulin resistance. So that's a, you know, potentially cause of metabolic dysfunction or insulin resistance or some types of hormonal birth control. Whereas progesterone, I would say does not cause insulin resistance in the same way. It's not insulin sensitizing the way estrogen is, but it does do some other good things. It promotes sleep, it supports thyroid function, and straight up stimulates metabolic rate. So, and it's anti-inflammatory. So, you know, it has some indirect ways of supporting metabolism. And the research suggests that most people on progesterone will either lose weight or stay the same. You know, once in a while, you'll get people claiming it was, you know, that they gained weight on progesterone. That's actually quite unusual, I find, but it does happen. What's been your experience? Do you get people saying that it helps with metabolism?
Yeah, I mean, when they're actually tracking their calories and doing all of the, you know, like I've never had anyone say I've been eating the same calories and I've introduced progesterone and I've gained weight. I've never had anyone that happen. But I mean, we in our program get everyone to track their food, track their macros. You know, it's quite a sort of data-driven program. But I have heard people say that.
Oh, that it helps with weight loss or weight gain?
Well, I've heard people say that it's causing weight gain, but I often wonder, I'm like, well, yeah, are you actually like tracking everything and looking at everything? I've just never had any experience with anyone in our program when they're tracking everything.
Yeah. Well, it does stimulate appetite. So there's that, like it definitely will make women hungrier. And that's true in our own cycle as well. When progesterone kicks in, it'll increase hunger and also, you know, taking
So if you
it.
Eat more, if you get more hungry, you eat more. So
Also, one of the reasons it's stimulating hunger is it's also stimulating metabolic rate. So you're also burning potentially sort of 300 more calories a day on when progesterone is high. So it's quite a dynamic hormone. And obviously the other great things about progesterone is it can lighten menstrual flow. So, you know, progestins from hormonal birth control can do that. And so can progesterone. And then with progesterone, at least you're getting, you know, some of the other benefits for potentially for brain and breast health and things like that.
Cool. Can you talk a little bit more about like the symptoms that women experience in perimenopause and like why they're experiencing?
Yeah. Well, the early, like I said, I would say perimenopause is defined by progesterone going away or, you know, dropping essentially. So there's different, now depending on who you ask, there's all different lists of symptoms out there. I use the list I provided in Hormone Repair Manual, and the list I use with my patients is a list of 9. Now I'm going to have to remember what they are because it's been a few years since I had that in front of me, but it's all good. Most of them are very intuitive and I, you know, make sense according to what's going on. So these would be, and in fact, Professor Pryor, Geraldine Pryor, who I've mentioned a few times, she's a progesterone researcher. She's a Canadian.
I should interview her on the podcast.
Yeah,
I'll get you
the
details.
If you can. She's just a champion of women's health. She's been at this for 40, 50 years, basically. She's published over 100 papers. Yeah, she was a clinician for a long time, but is, you know, primarily now a scientist, still writing into her 80s, which is
incredible.
Amazing. Yeah, we're still doing research. Well, she is trying to retire, to be fair. So I'm not sure how many interviews she's still doing, but that's fair enough in
Stop
your early 80s.
Telling people to interview me. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So she provides a list of 9 symptoms of perimenopause that she says can be used diagnostically, essentially. Like if you have, I think she says, if you have 3 or 4 of the 9 symptoms. So it would be shortening of period cycle length. So, you know, still regular, but shortening, counting from day 1 to day 1 gets shorter. Increased flow and pain, potentially those might be the same point with the, and there's a lot of this is from reduced progesterone. Breast pain, that's another big one. I'm just counting them on my fingers, make sure I get all 9. increased frequency of migraines. Very often women will report what my patients have said is that they might have had migraines when they were a teenager, and then maybe if they went on the pill, but then they went away for, these are hormonal migraines, you know, went away for years, and then they start to come back in a woman's 40s. That's really common. That's progesterone dropping away, because progesterone normally has a migraine reducing effect. Sleep disturbance, it's particularly midnight, you know, the sort of 3 a.m. waking, increased intensity of premenstrual mood symptoms, and night sweats. Night sweats might be number 8. And then, oh my God, I might have missed one, but like definitely one of the 9 is weight gain with no explanation, like nothing changed with diet or exercise. And that is from, a lot of that's from the redistribution of body weight that starts to happen when but first progesterone and then estrogen drops away. And actually in that state, testosterone starts to shine through more in women, and testosterone does promote what's called, you know, visceral fat, or what's actually called android fat, or sort of male type fat under the belly fat. And so women will start to get that change in their body shape, and that's associated with an increase in insulin resistance. And that's what the researchers in one of the papers, they used the phrase the metabolic upheaval of perimenopause. And it's very real, right? Like all the triglycerides go up, like a lot of the markers start to change. So,
and you know, you talked about, and you talk about this in your book, you know, what are some of the things, the natural, you know, things that you can do to improve these symptoms that you get your clients to do?
Yeah, right. So in Hormone Repair Manual, my perimenopause book, I do kind of lay it out in a few steps. Like step one is what I call the basic action plan for brain rewiring. The rewiring is the, you know, recalibration that's happening that I will have, you know, have explained earlier in the book about how the brain has to recalibrate not only the nervous system in general, but the energy system of the whole body, including of the brain. So to keep, you know, delivering enough energy to all the cells, it has to start doing things a bit differently. So brain rewiring would be a lot of the things we've been talking about, like build, you know, moving the body, building muscle, getting enough rest and sleep. Circadian rhythm is a huge part of that, just because that is just has such a big effect on the nervous system and metabolism. Like it's just massive.
It's horrible when you don't have a good night's sleep. I can't honestly want to feel like I want to slip my wrists if I ever, if I get stressed, I don't sleep very well. Even no matter how much food I eat or how much sun I get. And if I, don't have a good night's sleep, it's, I think in the older you get, I feel the more sensitive you are to stress too, like you said.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and actually in women's, like during the perimenopause transition, women are, they don't cope as well with stress. That is just, that's one of the for sure symptoms. And I'll just, to everyone listening who might be experiencing that, it does improve, and it really does. And like you get into your, usually I'd say, I've just been talking to a couple of people about it today. I think it's 2 to 3 years, maybe 2 to 4 years after the final period, there's a stability that just kind of kicks in, you know, and that's whether you're on hormone therapy or not, actually, which is quite interesting. Like there is just this sort of recalibration, the body, you know, figures it out, sorts itself out. And that's, you know, obviously that's if everything's going well and the body's healthy, but it's not a forever kind of thing. So I know it's, I do talk about this in Hormone Repair Manual. There can be this feeling of like, oh my goodness, this is how I'm always going to be now, but that is not how you're always going to be. It's it's temporary. So that's basic action plan would be all those just good things, you know, getting protein. And then I do talk about some supplements at that kind of early phase. My two favorites are, you know, magnesium and taurine, which when I was writing that book, my editor was like, I guess we should put these in the water supply. Like they're pretty important.
I take both of those actually. Yeah. Both of them at night. Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty helpful. And then, you know, there's some other supplements obviously that can be helpful. And then there's the whole question around hormone therapy, and we can try to tease some of that apart. I think,
Why do you think then, you know, you describe it as it's, you're starting to like not lose or not make as much progesterone, but why do you think it is that, you know, so many women come to me and they say, well, they think that it's because of a lack of estrogen. So
part of what's happened, I just did a social media post about this today, actually. So after the call, you can have a look. So it's weird, but like how much of confusion can be generated from words, like kind of using the wrong words for things. Like I'll just actually give another example before I get into the word confusion around perimenopause, menopause. But like even the word confusion, like I mentioned before, insulin resistance. And I'll just say for what it's worth, it, like a synonym for insulin resistance that even I have used sometimes is pre-diabetes. And they kind of go together and you think, well, they're kind of the same, but here's the problem. Like, pre-diabetes, people think, oh, well, it's about high blood sugar. But actually, I think I might have even said earlier in our conversation today, like, insulin resistance can be associated with episodes of low blood sugar. Mm-hmm. Like, blood sugar can be normal. It can be low at times. In fact, that's one of the main reactive hypoglycemia is one of the main symptoms of insulin resistance. So that's an example where I think, you know, using the term pre-diabetes can actually confuse people, because then they're sort of pointed in the wrong direction from what they need to do. Like, I really realized that when I was actually on social media, I had someone say, well, I must not have insulin resistance because I get low blood sugar sometimes. So, you know, that must rule it out. It's like, absolutely not. Like, in fact, that's a symptom of it. So that's an example of where words can be confusing. Now, in terms of your question about why, what is happening in the perimenopause space that is, what's happened basically is the word menopause is being conflated with perimenopause. So this is actually a big deal. And it sounds like a small thing, but it's actually huge, because during perimenopause, or the numbers, you know, up to 10, not usually 10, but, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 years before the final period, especially in the early parts of that, the early phases, and I talk about the different phases, estrogen is actually higher than normal. It's spiking up to potentially 3 times higher. It's then crashing down. So you are getting some estrogen withdrawal symptoms, but it's mainly, so estrogen's going up and down very dramatically. And then progesterone has just kind of left the scene. And so that's obviously quite a different hormonal situation from.
So if you're listening to this podcast, like the old me, you've probably cycled through a lot of diets trying to reach a number of the scales. Do you just feel like no matter how hard you try, you just can't seem to build muscle, lose that stubborn body fat, or manage your perimenopausal or menopausal symptoms? This is where the 7-day live challenge comes in. For just a one-off payment of $49, you'll work directly with Craig and me for 7 days to learn the exact strategies you need to see real lasting changes. And it's not just about the challenge. You'll actually get lifetime access to the course materials and bonuses, so you can revisit them whenever you need to and stay on track. So here's what you get when you join. Live coaching calls every day with Craig and I, where we break down your training, nutrition, and mindset, ensuring you know exactly what you need to do to reach your goals. These calls are recorded and saved to the course material, which you keep for life. We're going to set you customized starting macronutrient and calorie targets based on your goals. You'll learn how to train for your body, focusing on building muscle and managing fat loss, with workouts designed for busy women over 40. We've also got information on activity levels and also the right types of cardio you should be doing. We're going to teach you about meal planning. We're going to teach you how to find what works for your body, as well as how to improve your metabolism so that you can nourish your body without feeling deprived. You're also going to discover how to balance your hormones naturally, improve your energy, your sleep, your mood, and your digestion. Plus, you'll get access to an exclusive members-only community where you'll connect with other women who are on the same journey as you, women who've been through the ups and downs of fad diets and failed attempts. You get 30 days access to our new strength tracker app, so you can track your progress, workouts, and nutrition. And you get access to hundreds of workouts that are fully customizable to the equipment you have available. They also come with full video tutorials. And if you do want to train at home, we have dumbbell-only programs. You get meal plans, food lists, and recipe books. This isn't just another fad diet or workout plan. This is a chance to learn from experts who've helped countless women just like you. And the best part is, it's all for a one-off payment of just $49 AUD, and you get lifetime access to the course materials and the incredible bonuses. So no ongoing fees, just results. So now I'm going to take you through the incredible bonuses we're throwing in. You'll get access to our 30-day pro-metabolic diet challenge. You'll get access to our 90-day transformation program, which includes a body composition and macro calculator to work out your starting macros and body composition and makes adjustments as your body changes. You'll get a 90-day customizable workout program. You can choose exercises based on the equipment you have, plus suggested weight progressions and video tutorials for each exercise. You'll also get an accountability and progress tracker to keep you on track and ensure you see real results. You'll get our incredible Pro Metabolic Family recipe book with over 50 family-friendly, delicious, simple recipes. You'll get my food freedom course with my coach, Greta Zirkoff, which will help you overcome emotional eating and binge eating. You'll get my How to Get Rid of Cellulite guide, my 4-day glute-focused training program with video exercise library, and my incredible progesterone masterclass with Kitty Martone. Now, the total value of the course plus the bonuses is $3,200. $437, and you get it all for a one-off payment of just $49. So if you're ready to break free from the cycle, lose body fat, build muscle, and just look and feel your best, this is your chance. I'll pop the link to join the challenge in the show notes, and let's get back to the podcast.
Menopause or postmenopause, depending on what word you want to use, where a woman is like her periods are done and she's in now in that lower estrogen phase. And especially if you start to confuse it with women who've gone through like surgical menopause or something where their ovaries were removed, or maybe they're like early menopause where they're 40 and they don't have any estrogen being made anymore. I mean, those are all very different situations. So we do, and it confuses with the research as well, because we'll get research about saying, you know, in menopause, estrogen therapy gives these benefits, potentially, whatever the research is saying. But then that just gets conflated, extrapolated to perimenopause. And actually, it's quite shocking, but there's been almost no, like almost zero research into hormone therapy in perimenopause. Actually, the only study I know of is Geralyn Pryor's study about progesterone for perimenopause, because she takes the position that especially the earlier phases of perimenopause, she calls the estrogen storm season. So estrogen is super high, like, there's things you can do about that, and there's things you can do about symptoms, but like she does recommend progesterone during that time. You said yourself, you know, a lot of your clients have found that's helpful. Professor Pryor did a clinical trial of progesterone for perimenopause. So yeah, but you see what I mean about the confusion between the two terms. So then you get these scientists saying, well, in menopause, as in like 3 years after a period, this is what's happening and you might need estrogen. But that's getting like extrapolated to someone who's 42 and still has heaps of estrogen. So this is where the confusion's coming from. So I hope conversations like this and slowly, slowly we'll, you know, start to bring some clarity to the discussion.
And it's just, you know, because obviously you provide a lot of case studies in your book around women that have come to you, and just these natural remedies that you've, you know, got, like all the things that you spoke about and taking some of the supplements and how, what an incredible improvement they've seen in their sleep and all of their symptoms.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously not everyone needs estrogen therapy, but some of my patients do benefit from estrogen therapy. So I always, we're in a very weird time. So this is what we are, like September 2024. We've gone from 3 years ago when my perimenopause book came out, most people had never even heard the word perimenopause, to now I'm almost scared to talk about it on social media.
Really?
I'm like, obviously have a book on it, and I have a lot of experience, and I've recommended estrogen therapy to lots of patients. I actually take a little bit of estrogen therapy myself. And yet there is such a combative atmosphere out there around, like, you know, I don't know if you've been following any of it. I don't know if you've tried to post about perimenopause or estrogen therapy, but there is like a very strong feeling among some people that, you know, all women should have access to estrogen therapy. And I guess I agree to that to some extent, but not all women want it or can take it. And not all women need it. There's this narrative out there that menopause.
Yeah, I agree that
menopause.
And I just think, I also think that, you know, so many women come to us and they're just living this incredibly stressed life. And, you know, once they reduce stress and they, you know, eat more food, and they, you know, we get our clients to eat liver and oysters, and, you know, the B vitamins and the vitamin A and, you know, all the minerals and things, and we get them to eat enough and stop like running around like chickens with their bloody head chopped off and get some sleep and take some magnesium. And it's like, it blows my mind at like 95% of them can not even, and then some will supplement with natural progesterone. A lot of women come off HRT too. They'll come into our program and do all of those things.
Yeah.
And I feel that, you know, like, and again, I'm not saying that, you know, everyone's different and they should do what's right for them, but sometimes I think looking at the core root issue, which is your lifestyle, how you live, like, I feel that it's a reflection of how you're living your life. And I feel women are just so overworked and overstressed and undernourished. And, you know, once they actually slow down and.
Well, the body knows what to do. We can talk about this perimenopause transition a little bit more, but I will just say how impressed I am that you get people to eat liver and oysters. That is awesome. I mean,
I've even got a company that makes freeze-dried liver and oyster capsules.
Do? Okay,
Well, we only made them because my business, Emma, the nutritionist who you know, introduced me to the work of Dr. A. Pete, and said, Kitty, you need to eat liver every week, 100 grams. And I choked it down for years. And then I started my own coaching business, helping women more with body recomposition and health as well. And yeah. I just said to her, we have just got so many women that just won't eat the liver. I'm like, can you just make some freeze-dried caps? So we ended up making them. So we just said to women, look, either eat the fresh liver, make some pate. We've got beautiful pate recipes, or take the freeze-dried capsules. So we get them on the liver, the oysters, collagen.
I actually love it. Yeah. And actually, I might try to get my hands on some of
I'll
your
send
liver
you
capsules.
Some. I'll send you some.
I'd love
I'll
to.
Send,
oh, we'll take
some of our skincare too. We make like, you know, and I'm sure you would agree with this. Like when you talk about in your book is lots of the chemicals that you rub on your skin. So before I met Emma, I was like fake tanning it up, you know, all these shitty creams, horrible makeups, you know, so many toxins and just adding to that estrogen load. And so we created like skincare that's got no seed oils and no toxins and
So no, it's interesting. So I'm all over the organ meat thing, even though I'm in the camp where I do struggle to cook it on a regular basis. We make pate sometimes.
I love pate.
It's challenging. It's challenging to cook it. We do have it, but like I would love, I'll try your capsules.
I'll send you some. You can try everything. Yeah.
And when you get to my metabolism book, you'll see there's a couple sections where I talk about the missing organ meats, the missing nutrients that we used to get from organ meats. I think that's actually a big part of the problem of the epidemic. Well, there's lots of reasons. There's lots of things going on that have pushed people into insulin resistance in a way that previous generations, well, a few generations back, just never had to deal with at all. And I do know it's interesting. I don't know. I'm not that familiar with Ray Peet's work, although I certainly know, because I will often get people saying, like, obviously, a lot of the things that I have formulated and, you know, through my read of the science line up quite a bit with his, because I get people saying, well, this is what Ray Peet said.
There are a lot of.
There's a lot of crossover.
Yeah.
And certainly around the polyunsaturated or the seed oil thing, I'm grateful that I'm in a safe space to talk to about that. Because I mean, I'm very concerned about the amount of polyunsaturated fat in the current modern diet. Like, I think it's, I mean, not to go on about it, but I
please go
think
on.
By several mechanisms, there's something really wrong. Like it's not just the way it oxidizes. I just shared something on social media a couple of days ago about how it's doing weird things, like interacting with the estrogen receptor and potentially like inducing apoptosis or cell death in ovarian cells. Like it's got a lot going on. And I got kind of slammed for that by a few people saying, you know, well, just, you know, it's polyunsaturated is very, you know, is the evidence, I guess that's the established.
It's so crazy though to think like, you know, like I say to clients, look, just try and stay away from like the canola oils and the, you know, the seed oils and, you know, like obviously if you eat some
grape
nuts,
seed.
Like don't worry
grape
about
seed's one of the high,
exactly. So I'm like, but think about how it's made. You know, like say if you're looking at how it's made versus some coconut oil or some butter or some, you know, like olive oil.
Partly the processing, it's partly just straight out the linoleic acid. We were just never meant to have that much of it. Mm. Linoleic acid is quite a powerful, like that's the omega-6, right? Like it's an essential nutrient and we need some of it for sure. So like we were never meant to have it. Yeah. Like we evolved on saturated fats. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. Like we did. Like this is where my evolutionary biology comes in. And there's, look, I mean, it's good. I can have this conversation with you right now. So this, like there's some new research into one of the saturated fats called C15. It's the 15 carbon saturated fat that looks like it's actually really, well, it's early days in the research, like, you know, but they're suggesting it probably plays quite an important role in metabolic health. Mm. And of course it's been missing for 4 generations now, because we're just like, you know, telling everyone get off that and onto margarine and onto
like the Ansel Keys. I feel like that was like the turning point when he did that bloody study and handpicked them. And then everyone, I actually remember like when my grandparents, because they lived on a farm.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, that study came out. And I remember mum switching to margarine, you know, Nutrilex, all the canola oils. It's crazy.
Well, I remember it too, but like in our house, fortunately, well, I mean, my parents, just my mom was just like, nope,
we're not
doing that. Like we're having, you know, we're still having butter. And so I'm very grateful for her to like, you know, doing that and setting the stage. And so I just had butter for decades. And anyway, so that's one area where definitely my stuff has obviously lined up a bit with, Ray Peet. I don't think I share like all every sort of nuanced, but
I just like his overarching principles. Like I feel, you know, like it's, you know, prioritize, you know, these nutrient dense, easy to digest, wholesome, old-fashioned foods. Like, I remember when I used to go to my grandma's house when I was young. She's dead now. So she would serve us, like, she would make steak and liver kidney pie.
Yeah.
We'd have homemade custards and ice creams, homemade bread, eggs.
Yeah.
She'd have the butter sitting on the counter,
yeah.
beautiful roast meats with root vegetables. You know, she'd have some green vegetables. It wasn't like, you know, in the 80s or the 90s, I was like, just eat, all I ate was fucking salad and chicken. You know, I didn't eat any of these, like, good carbs and fruit. We used to eat heaps of fruit. She'd squeeze fresh orange juice. She wasn't fat.
Yeah.
Never fat.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like it's just, and you know, it's having like, it really, I was so afraid of food before. Like, I restricted and got on the, you know, all the crazy diets and starved myself.
Mm-hmm.
And now I actually just nourish my body with like I eat liver and oysters and good quality dairy and, you know, bioavailable animal proteins, eggs, seafood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love sourdough bread, sourdough muffins, ice cream. I make homemade ice cream. Just yummy, like delicious, nutrient-dense food. And I feel like women are so afraid. And then, you know, like really reducing, we recommend those seed oils and those PUFAs in the diet. And it's like, it's life-changing. Like, we've got hundreds and hundreds of testimonials from women who've improved all of their symptoms. Like, it's
by making
like
that
you.
Change, like switching to the higher nutrient density and getting off
saturated
the vegetable oils.
And, yep.
Like having more saturated fat, less vegetable oil. Yeah, no, I'm not surprised. It's great you're getting those kind of results, and it does line up with what I would expect for sure. What my patients, it's hard to talk them into it sometimes though. It's like, are you
sure
I can have butter?
They're so brainwashed. Like, they're so brainwashed. And they're so afraid. Like, women, they're like, oh, I'm so afraid to eat some fucking fruit.
Yeah.
Like, fruit, you know, every day I eat beautiful fresh oranges, pawpaw, watermelon, like yummy, delicious fruits. And they're so afraid because the fitness industry, you know, they're following some fucking fitness influencer who's living off oat milk and, you know, green vegetables. And, you know, like, it's like these are just good old fashioned food, like that our great grandparents used to eat, you know? Yeah, you're right. They weren't having canola oil.
No.
Like our great grandparents, they were eating butter, lard, you know?
No, for sure. So we're lined up in that. I forget how we got onto that tangent. I was going to say a bit more about organ meats or what
the organ
meats.
Go for the organ, but it's really good to talk about the seed oils because it's, I think the same thing. But keep going about the organ meats because we just tell everyone eat liver, eat beef liver.
Yeah, I think you asked me a question and then I got so distracted by you saying you put all your clients on liver. I was
beef
just
liver.
Like, that is, I just
we
totally,
tell them
like,
every week you eat 100
distracted
grams of beef
by
liver.
That. So in what you'll discover, right, so you'll discover in my new book when you get back to Dubai and get a chance to read it. I'm so happy I managed to get that, send that to Dubai. It wasn't that easy, but like, I was
I know. It's really hard. Everything in Dubai is hard. Yeah.
But I managed, and I have another friend who I mentioned in Abu Dhabi. Yeah. And so it was actually when I was sending my book to you, I thought, I think I've got this now. I think I know how to get put the address. But anyway, you'll discover that there's, I talk about some missing metabolic nutrients, like through my lens, I would think, or I call them the five missing metabolic nutrients. There's more than five missing, but there's some big ones, I think, that have just kind of quietly disappeared from the diet as we switched away from all those foods you were just describing. So, well, one is magnesium. I think it's pretty important. Taurine, we've already touched on those. But in the topic of organ meats, choline and inositol were primarily from organ meats. And there's at least one scientific paper out there where they kind of propose that some of the epidemic of metabolic dysfunction or insulin resistance could just be all from all the missing inositol that we used to get from like kidneys and liver and things like that. And then the fifth nutrient I mentioned is glycine, which it would be again in sort of
collagen, gelatin.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So
eating the more bone broths and things like that.
Gelatinous.
So So you could definitely get it that way. You can also take glycine separately. So those are all ways to feel better.
Another thing we recommend this week for my lunches I've been having, I just love lamb neck stew. I make this yummy lamb neck stew and then I just supplement with our collagen in the morning in my coffee. So that's another thing we get them because it is high in glycine, collagen or gelatin.
It is.
Yeah.
For sure. Its main amino acid is glycine. So that's one way to get it. Yeah. No, that's, yeah. No, I, yeah, I'm very, I think I'm really, yeah, we're aligned on all the nutrient dense foods.
That liver, I do want to make, I love pate and I just haven't made pate for a while. So I think because I've been busy, but now I'm in Australia, I might you know, obviously we've got really good meats and things. It's hard in Dubai. It's not as good. You know, they import stuff. It's hard to get beef liver. So I'm going to get some beef liver and make some pate and have it on sourdough toast with my coffee, with my maple syrup in the morning and my collagen and eggs and Well, do you want to touch a bit more on the seed oils? So that's, it's good. Like I, it's just, I think another person that's, because they're in everything. All the packaged foods, you know, and even on the skin, this, even when you put them on the skin.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I can't speak to that as much, but just more to the point that it's been a massive change in the last 60 to 70 years. And some people, depending on who, every scientist has a different opinion about what has gone so terribly wrong with metabolic health. And it probably is a combination of things, but I think there's some big smoking guns. And I do think, through my lens as a biologist, I guess, and a clinician all these years, and just seeing what works and hearing, you know, what you're saying, it makes sense to me that polyunsaturated, like the amount that people are having is just not working in the human body. It's just, we were never meant to have that. It's just not functioning. And that kind of, it does fly in the face. Like I had some doctors on my social media the other day explaining to me, it's like, well, all the all the long-term observational trials, you know, correlate polyunsaturated with better health. I'm like, do they? I mean, I guess, like, do they though? Because it just doesn't make sense to me. And it depends on how you crunch the numbers, obviously. Yeah.
And we've just seen, just from anecdotal, like working with women, they come in, like we just follow the same fucking process with all of them. We get them eating all of the foods we talked about, getting enough sleep, getting sunshine, getting the nutrients you talked about, strength training, and they just, it improves all their symptoms. You know,
that's
like it's incredible. Yeah. And it's so nice to meet someone else who's recommending these natural, you know, like lifestyle changes and nutrition changes.
No, it's true. Yeah. And it is, for a lot of women, that's going to be enough. So actually, I don't know what the question, I know how we got before I got onto the tangent of like all of this, which has been super interesting. We were just talking about, you know,
the hormone replacement therapy.
Hormone therapy, and what's going on with the conversation around that. So one thing I would say that can help to position this a little bit more, again, through my biologist lens, menopause is not an accident of living too long. There is a narrative out there. I don't know if you've encountered it or if any of your listeners have, but there's this sort of this, it's a narrative really. It's just a story that, you know, women, we never used to live past 45. And so now that we are, it's just our ovaries are giving out. And now we're in this state of estrogen deficiency. That is just, from a scientific perspective, that is not how it's gone down at all. And so in my perimenopause book, Hormone Repair Manual, I reference another book called The Slow Moon Climbs, which I'm a huge fan of. It's a dense, like really detailed book about evolutionary biology and history. But like, she does make the case that menopause has been with us for a long time, like probably a couple hundred thousand years, like as long as we've been human, really, as long as we've been Homo sapiens. It's hard to know at what point it evolved, but it did evolve. And actually, I guess the way to see it is that the way it looks like it went down is humans in general, humans of both sexes, evolved a longer lifespan because of like positive selection pressure, or because women in their post-reproductive years are so freaking like beneficial to the group. Like, you know, women in their 50s and 60s just hold everything together. That's what we know is happening in modern day forager people, like the Hadza in Tanzania. They're just like getting it done, right? Gathering more food than anybody else. They're, you know, sharing it with all the, you know, the children and the women, you know, who are having babies and lactating. And so this is no accident. And it is true that in general, humans used to have a much lower life expectancy, but that was an average. That was because only one in two children made it past the age of five. And lots of people used to die, and sadly, from infections and injury and women dying in childbirth. So it used to be a very hazardous world, and it was hard to get through to an older age. But if people could escape all of those hazards, they can and did live to 70 or 80 like we do today. So this was, and definitely they did that without hormone therapy. I'll just point out 200,000 years ago, did not have hormone therapy to get them through into their 70s. So that, I mean, I really think it's sort of, that debunks the idea that it's a deficiency that we have to remedy with hormones. That's not how it is at all. Now, as to whether you know, some women can do better taking hormone therapy or feel better with it. Absolutely. And the reason, and I hope this isn't, I'll try not to be too technical, but like, I think this is helpful to understand, like the menopause, the perimenopause transition itself, there's nothing about it that should be inherently symptomatic, right? Yeah. Like yep. The same with periods, actually. Like, so when I wrote my first book, people had this idea like, well, periods are painful and difficult, and that's just how they are.
It's but normal. And the doctor just tells you to take the pill. They don't. Yeah. No. Yeah.
So when the body's healthy with all the things you're describing, like as you get healthier, periods get healthier. So periods are an expression of general health. So is the perimenopause transition to a large extent is expression of general health. So is metabolic health an expression of general health, I would say. Well, that's what you've been saying too with some of your examples. But one thing, just it's not just about like some of the lifestyle things we can control, because I do need to clarify that, because people might be thinking, well, you know, the perimenopausal symptoms that I'm encountering are quite, you know, strong, and it's not from something I'm eating wrong. And totally, like, so what I talk about in the book is that there is something called evolutionary mismatch. So there's lots of reasons why what, you know, for our ancestors or women in like modern day, you know, forager people like the Hadza, for them, the menopause transition is symptomless, totally fine. Like it happens. They know women stop having periods at 45. They're happy about it. They don't have any symptoms. And I know, which is not to say we're imagining them. It's not that at all. It's actually just evolutionary mismatch is all the things in our modern environment that are setting us up to make a normal transition be symptomatic.
Yeah.
And that doesn't include, it includes diet to a large extent. It includes circadian disruption. It also includes environmental
and stress.
Toxins.
I think stress too.
Stress
as
well.
Yeah.
For sure.
All of
stress.
Those things.
Alcohol as well. Actually, alcohol is a big one. And alcohol is an easy one because most people can pretty easily give that up and feel so much better so quickly off it that it's like just an easy win. But I'll give an example of something, an environmental or like a, sorry, an evolutionary mismatch that's not maybe under people's, as much under their conscious, not under conscious control at all. So I do put this citation is in the book, my book, Hormone Repair Manual, that some scientists have looked at the fact, it's quite sad and depressing, but that during the 70s, when I was a child, so this would definitely apply to my generation and earlier, there was quite a bit of lead in the environment, including leaded petroleum, you know, leaded gasoline, like just lead in paint and in the soils, and like quite sad. All that came from industrial processes. Mm. And what the body does with lead is sequester it into the bone. So it's like, ooh, better just put that somewhere away where it's not going to do any harm. And then unfortunately, one of the features of menopause as estrogen declines is increased bone turnover. So potentially you're now getting lead releasing. Now, and that can cause neurological symptoms for sure. So as to how much, you know, how many of us are encountering neurological symptoms because of that, hard to predict. I don't think anyone has that number, but there's an example of, some very real symptoms that it's no one's fault. You know, it's just sort of the reality of going through perimenopause in the modern world. And so I kind of say that to circling back to the fact that some women feel better on hormone therapy. And also there is, for some women, potentially estrogen therapy is going to mitigate or reduce the long-term risk of cardiovascular disease. And I'll just explain, that's actually because estrogen therapy mitigates insulin resistance. So, I mean, that's probably not the only reason, but that's a big part of it. So this is why my third book is about insulin resistance, because if that's the way estrogen therapy is helping people, it's also, there's other things you can do, not only estrogen therapy, to improve or reverse insulin resistance. And I'd really like to see that in the science a bit more. Like, I'd like to see scientists, like in their, as they're maybe studying, for example, these long-term observational studies, like does taking estrogen therapy reduce your risk of heart attack over the next 20 years? It's like, let's also just track which of those participants that your data points had insulin resistance or then reversed insulin resistance. Like, I think that's like quite an important factor that would inform us a bit more about what's going on, because my observation is estrogen therapy is more helpful, kind of gives more relief or more benefits potentially to women who do have insulin resistance compared to women who don't potentially. So that just, it's just important from a more broad perspective and also an empowering perspective, because there's lots of other, even for people who can't take estrogen therapy, there's lots of other ways to reverse insulin resistance.
Perfect. I'm just looking at the time.
Yeah.
It just, we're already at the hour mark, but that was so good. And I'm sure we could talk again on way more things, but if people want to find your books, like they can just buy them online. Hey, like, I mean, you can just Google them and, or can you buy them on Amazon?
Yeah, they're on Amazon. Yeah, it's usually pretty easy to ship unless you're in Dubai, but no, even in Dubai, you can get them, like anywhere you can potentially get them. So my website is larabryden.com. And oh, and my social media
and Instagram. I'll put all your like handles and website and the books and things. I mean, people would have already heard me talk about your books anyway, but I'll put them in the show notes. And I am looking forward to reading your book. And I can't believe that, because I thought I'll read some on the plane too.
Yeah,
it's a 14-hour bloody flight.
I know, long
flight. You know, like, oh, I forgot a few things, but anyway, that was so good. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, thanks for the conversation. And do send me, email me later about your liver supplements.
I will. I'll at the end of this, I'll grab your address and I'll send you some. Everyone, as always, take a screenshot of the episode and share your biggest takeaways on Instagram stories and tag me at KITTYBLOMFILD. And you go into the draw to win a chance of Saturay premium collagen. And I will be back again next week. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, or leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. That helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. You can also keep up with your host and find her content on Instagram at KITTYBLOMFIELD. Once again, thanks for tuning in to the Weight Loss for Women podcast, and we hope you'll join us again on the next episode. Until then.